Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Game one of the American League Championship Series. As the Chicago White Sox greet the world champion Toronto Blue Jays.
Michael was scheduled to throw out the first pitch.
He threw out the first pitch of game one of the ALCS. Then he went up into a private box with his family.
I'm watching a White Sox playoff game in Comiskey Park. A kid comes up and says, Mr. Reinsdorf wants to talk to you. So I went up and I grabbed Jerry and, what's up? He said, Michael's quitting. I said, what? No, what's up? Don't joke with me, that's serious stuff. He said, no, he's quitting, Jerry.
That game was on Tuesday, and we wanted to hold the story until Wednesday, but it leaked out.
Breaking story here, the Chicago Bulls have called a press conference for tomorrow morning, and there's high speculation and report that Michael Jordan will retire from basketball forever.
It's a lot more fun than being a White Sox fan.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
I'm watching that. It's a detail that you know, but it's not top of mind. And I'm thinking of you, the White Sox fan. Like, man. All right, so you're on the air, right? You're hosting on the Score.
Right.
I'm a kid who's just crying that Jordan is retiring. I could not have cared less about the White Sox or anything else in the world. There was nothing else in my world when Michael Jordan retired. What was it like for you?
Well, Alex Fernandez and Jack McDowell, yeah, those guys meant the world to me, Danny. It was a crazy, crazy day. One of the most bizarre days in my time ever doing sports radio was the day after, during the American League Championship Series, Sox and Toronto, when the word broke, Jordan was quitting. So you had that as a toggle all day. It's, you know, our first taste of postseason baseball as a radio station, the White Sox first taste of it in 10 years, and only the third time in my lifetime where there was postseason baseball in town. And all of a sudden, that's parked because the greatest player in NBA history has decided to call it quits in October, and it shocked everybody. And it literally stopped traffic in Chicago. And the video last night, watching it as people were, you know, leaving the ballpark early, and everybody's trying to get comments from the principals, and they're scurrying off in their vehicles. And just that next day on the radio station was just chaotic. And to give us a third entree to offer up, the Cubs fired manager Jim LaFever that following day, too. So we had that in the mix. But it was bizarre. It was unexpected. And everything that followed Jordan's retirement was you know, it was painted last night as lunacy, some of the suggestions people were making, but it was pretty easy to connect the dots math on Jordan's retirement, to think that there were weird things going on with the NBA, with his father's mysterious death. And people who, you know, were suggesting those themes at the time last night, they were portrayed as just really, really out there. But it was easy for people to speculate on it because there was a lot of gray area on James Jordan. And there was a lot of uncertainty about Michael's gambling and how much the NBA was upset by it. I didn't buy into any of it that Jordan was serving a suspension, but I certainly think there was enough out there where it was reasonable enough to speculate on the NBA having an issue with him over it.
Yeah, I always thought that the NBA having an issue with it was one thing, but the idea that that could have actually been kept a secret was so ludicrous that I never thought that he was actually suspended for gambling, right? I'm sure they and their corporate partners didn't love that the face of the league was in Atlantic City casinos between playoff games and was owing Slim Buehler five-figure checks.
The Richard Esquinas book and everything that, yeah, went with Jordan, sure, yeah. That did not agree with them.
Yeah, there's a difference, though, between not liking it and then turning off the faucet, right? It would be pretty ridiculous to suspend Michael Jordan.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also, like, an arbitrary length of time. Oh, it's 18 months. You could come back in the middle of a season 2 years from now.
Right.
It makes no sense. Conspiracy theories are fun, but they are almost never true because people want to add 2 + 2 = 5.5. And so speculation is one thing. I did feel badly for Michael Jordan last night all over again. I could not imagine what it would be like. You're 30 years old, right? You're an adult. You've experienced a lot. You've made a lot of money. You've dealt with a lot of fame. But your father, who is your best friend, getting murdered at any age would be difficult. You're still a young man at that point. Dad being heaped upon you, unbelievably challenging. And then for people to say that you had something to do with it, like, that is just a level of callousness that I'm sure would happen with Twitter in 2020 and how some journalistic standards have gone out the window and TMZ and all of that.
Right.
But it is kind of wild to make the jump. All right, you want to say he was suspended? Sure, the NBA didn't like it. If you're going to say that it had something to do with his father being murdered, you better have some damn proof.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody actually of credibility suggested that. I don't know. I don't think anybody wrote it or anything like that. It was something you'd hear, you know, in the corner of a bar. But I don't know if anybody ever actually wrote that. Yeah, of course, those were just horrible memories last night that we were all, you know, asked to revisit, and the funeral at which, you know, and it's. I understand why there are cameras at funerals, but it doesn't make it any less vulgar to me that there would be news coverage of it. I mean, you got a global celebrity, and his father was missing for a while, and he, you know, but it's still, it just, I shake my head whenever I see that. It's just like, man, there is no such thing as a private world for some people, and I feel bad for him in that regard. But yeah, that's got to be awful for anybody to have to deal with that, to, you know, a family member has gone missing and then you find out they're murdered. That's horrible.
Yeah. And the private moment stuff, he's crying on the floor of the locker room and there's cameras, you know, like he took the ball and he ran off the court and then he comes back out for some of the ceremonies. And like he was trying to find a private moment and he couldn't have one. There was a story in The Undefeated that got reposted. It was from a couple of years ago with the photographer who took those shots of Jordan on the ground crying that you had referenced earlier in the show. And he was like, I didn't know what to do. Like, I knew it was a moment of history and I'm a photographer and I'm allowed to be there. But he said he snapped like 3 or 4 pictures total and then just didn't feel right. He's like, I chronicled history, but it felt like such a private moment that even though he was allowed to be there, he felt like he wasn't supposed to be there. And the conflict that came in to him as a photographer. And like to your point about the funeral, Michael Jordan didn't have private moments when it was something to do with, like, if the public knew about it, there was no way to keep any aspect of it private. And that it wore on him twice, right? He left the Bulls twice and then came back because he wasn't able to deal with some version of that public pressure.
That moment in Seattle where he's lying on the floor clutching the ball, and you said the photographer didn't know.
It was in Chicago.
He didn't know what to do. Nobody around him knew what to do. His people didn't know what to do. They didn't know what he wanted. And I've seen the video before, but I've never heard it accompanied with the audio of him crying, him sobbing and struggling to catch his breath. It's compelling, fascinating video. I've not heard that version of it before.
All right, guys, give him a break. All right. Come on, guys. Go give him a break. Guys, that's enough.
Give him a break.
Just so vulnerable.
No, nobody knew what to do. When he's saying give him a break, I mean, nobody knew what to do. Even the Bulls people, nobody around Jordan knew how to handle that situation. He's obviously, he's having a moment right now, and he doesn't appear to want to be around anybody, so let's just leave him there for a little bit, and eventually he got up.
Yeah, it a totally wild experience, obviously, and, for him to relive it for this documentary also. You know, I know there's criticisms of stuff that has been included and has not been included, and we've made them, but there was no way to do this with having that subject be off limits. And even all these years later, talking about the murder of your father on camera takes a decent amount of strength, and he certainly showed it. When you were covering whatever it was, like 1.8 seconds with Scotty, the gambling stuff, the retirement, do you remember all of how you felt on the air at the time, and has any of that changed through watching the documentary? Because they haven't been doing the classic sports documentary thing, other than that one Mike Francesa clip about going to Atlantic City and him questioning his desire, mm-hmm. or whatever it was. Like, they haven't been airing old Score clips during this documentary. I wish very badly that they were. Do you remember any takes then that would maybe be different than they were now?
Maybe even just even more of an understanding for and empathy for his want to get away from all of it, based on how much of a fishbowl his existence was. And I don't think I've mentioned it since the documentary started, but the one time I had a chance to do something with Jordan publicly was at the Chicago Auto Show, and this is in February of 91. It's in the first title run. So, I mean, he's a global star, but he's not an NBA champion just yet. And they had a magnificent second half to that season. But the security he was surrounded by a bevy of security, and it was so detailed that they did it in an adjacent green room in McCormick Place. In the unlikely event that there'd be somebody who's not supposed to be there, they had a green room that was designated for celebrities. Well, they had a secret green room that was on the opposite end of the arena. And I remember I was asked to go on stage with Jordan. He was working for Chevy. Kopic couldn't do it, told me I was doing it. I said, gladly, I'll stand on stage and interview Jordan for a half an hour. And I remember walking through the bowels of McCormick Place with just him not being able to do anything without attracting such a ridiculous crowd, and the fuss that he, that went with it. And that was the day of the NBA trade deadline, and MJ was picking my brain on why the Bucks did something. What's Milwaukee thinking? He says, I don't know. You tell me.
Danny Buckets over here.
Yeah, I think Dale Ellis got moved that day. I can't remember specifically. But just how much of a fishbowl existence he had to live, and how everything was so choreographed, and it had to be that way, or he just wouldn't have any kind of a life. So I felt strongly that he absolutely had earned time away then, and it's just more, I feel every bit as strong, probably even stronger now. I couldn't imagine what that would be like. Yeah, there are a lot of rewards that go with it, but there's a lot of sacrifice you have to make too, and compromise you have to make. You belong to the world to a very large degree when you reach that level, and it was something that he wasn't as comfortable with as he might have thought he was going to be. But so I totally got it. I totally supported it, and I do today.
The retirement, when it's happening during that Sox playoff series, you last week were talking about, with when we had Judd on, the fighting for Hawks airtime and not winning those fights in the 90s, right, with the Bulls and all of that.
Right.
You know, when they show that press conference and Peter Jennings is there and how did Gene Greco put it? He was like, everyone is here. Dick Schaap is here.
Yeah, Tom Brokaw's in the house, right?
Yeah, that story was, all due respect to the White Sox, so much bigger than a White Sox playoff series. The next day, is it anything other than, oh my God, Michael Jordan has retired?
On the air?
Yeah.
There's some, you know, the Sox were, you know, letting the ALCS slip away. So there was some. I don't remember on a percentage basis. I think Jordan was, I'm going to just guess here, Jordan probably was 60% of the show. The Sox maybe 30% of the show. And Jim LaFever being fired by the Cubs, 10% of the show. That's a guess.
It's wild though, right? Like biggest story. It reminds me of the what's the date of it? Tanny will remember the OJ where they did the 30 for 30 with like the OJ chase and the Rangers and the NBA Finals all happening at once.
Yeah, June 17th, 1994. Shep had that in my ear. Thank you, Shep.
Thank you. June 17th, 1994. Like all of those things happening simultaneously to, you know, a couple of New York teams in their championship and the Rangers parade and the Knicks and the Rockets. And then, oh yeah, by the way, O.J. Simpson. Just
hey, Twitter world, it's me, yours truly.
That was an oop for you, Tanny. But just the idea of another sports story splintering into Michael Jordan retiring is kind of hard to fathom, even if it is the White Sox blowing a huge playoff series. Like, you're right. It's totally the right programming thing to do. But it would be very hard for me to be like, hey, Michael Jordan's retiring. But coming up next, how about this baseball game?
Yeah, I get it. And you know, I obviously went with what I thought we, you know, should be talking about, and that is high percentage of Jordan. But, you know, yes, there was that meathead in me that says, oh, my God, last year we had the Hawks. It was the Hawks who got pushed aside, and they got
the
to
Hawks?
The Cup final in 92. And lost to the Penguins, got swept by the Penguins when the Bulls were winning their second. And now here we got, now they're getting in the way of the White Sox news, too. I can't even have a White Sox playoffs without the Bulls rearing their ugly heads. But I totally get it. It's the right thing to do. You know, it's not a matter of trying to, you know, create interest. It's trying to reflect it. Jordan obviously was the bigger story. That's why it got more airtime. And I appreciate a texter who dug up the trade. It was, in fact, Dale Ellis in February of 91, traded by Seattle to the Bucks for Ricky Pearce. And MJ looking down at me, what are Milwaukee thinking? I don't know.
Do it.
Yeah, Dale Ellis.
I don't know.
You don't forget where you were when Dale Ellis was traded.
It's like,
what an omission in the documentary.
But Danny,
Jordan talking about that trade with Dan McNeil.
But Danny, like, in 93, the Sox were a thing. Like, I don't want to say it was a Sox town or anything, but the Cubs hadn't been, you know, relevant in 89. You know, the playoff appearances in this city were few and far between.
Right.
And the Bulls were on after title number three. So the Bulls were kind of, it was like, you know, there's nothing new going on there. People were used to winning with the Bulls. So people still wanted their White Sox talk. And that was a big deal at the time. So
ballpark was still new only in year number three.
And don't forget, Frank Thomas was on that Bigsby and Crothers billboard as well. So at the time he was huge in this town. So yeah, it sounds silly looking at it, especially in the lens of watching 10 hours of a Bulls documentary, but yeah, it was a big deal.
Sox,
and I promise you it's not a Cubs thing. Like,
oh, I don't think it is. I don't suspect that.
It's just not. It's not at all. It's just the idea. I mean, Michael Jordan retiring was like the biggest story in the world. So you would certainly think it would be in Chicago. But just the timing of it was wild to see him leaving a baseball game and driving his own Mercedes away from the stadium because the news had leaked. Like, That's a crazy time place for that story to happen. It's one of those things where when you see the footage, it doesn't feel real that it actually happened that way. But Jerry Reinsdorf had to leave his beloved baseball to deal with this pesky little basketball story. What was it? Oh, yeah, Michael Jordan retiring.
That Sox team was what was beloved, though. A lot of stars on that Sox team. A lot of number one picks who came to the big leagues and produced huge, like Thomas – who was the MVP that year. McDowell, a number one pick, was your Cy Young winner. Alex Fernandez and Robin Ventura, number one picks. That was a very, very exciting year. And it was an exciting year on the score, too, as we were canvassing Chicagoland. And we had a song contest for White Sox enthusiasm. Some guy who was teasing Les Grobstein was one of the finalists. Mike Berkowitz for a Pink Floyd parody he did with the Grobber featured prominently.
Things you remember.
Great song.
Yeah, it was a great song.
Jerry Reinsdorf in the baseball also, last night, like Michael Jordan walking out and standing with the players when there was the labor issue. I know it's a documentary on the 90s Bulls, but they kind of glossed over Reinsdorf's role in all of that. Because that impacts, obviously, the White Sox in the playoffs, too. Tough run for the White Sox in this documentary. Maybe that could be episode 11, Tanny. How the White Sox got short-shifted in this documentary.
Yeah, I certainly, you know, as soon as I saw that 93 ALCS pop up last night, I'm like, oh, God, don't make me relive this. You want to talk about one of the worst times in my life as a 10-year-old. Your whole world is, you know, if you're a Sox fan, the White Sox and Michael Jordan, you're living in Chicago as a kid, and then both things are sort of crumbling before you, and you don't know which to be more upset about. Like, but in reality, it was the White Sox, if I can be honest with you.
I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was. But yeah, there was not really a mention of Jerry Reinsdorf and his prominent role in the strike of 94. But it was compelling stuff last night, man. And just the idea of him being like, I totally support Michael Jordan in his decision. Do you believe him? Because I didn't. I would imagine that was a very upset owner of a basketball team.
Yeah, I would think so. You got to put on the public face. What are you going to do? You understood why. You were around the guy enough. You understood exactly why. I would think you'd have Jerry would have a sensitive, the human side to him, and I think he did.
I love that he kept paying Jordan his salary after he was retired. He was so underpaid all those years. Was that new? I don't remember hearing that before.
Well, wasn't it because there was always, or there was?
I think that was out. I'm pretty sure that was out there, but I'm not positive.
I think it was too, and I think that was somewhat fueled the rumors of it being a suspension. It was like he's still under contract by the Bulls, so that if he wants to come back or when he comes back, it will be for the Bulls. And hey, it's just convenient that Jerry owns this baseball team, and so it's a perfect thing for him to do with his time away. Like, it's not like he signs with the Pirates. He signs with the team that Jerry Reinsdorf owns. So I'm pretty sure that was out, and that was part of what fueled those conspiracy theories at the time. We had I don't even know if this qualifies as a malaprop on the station earlier today, but you know we love it so much. It's some of the best audio from last night as well still to come on.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Score.
Yeah, let's not get it wrong. He was a jerk.
It's our guy Will Perdue on every Monday after The Last Dance with Dan Bernstein on the Dan Bernstein Show, 9 to noon right here on The Score. This segment of Mac and Parkin sponsored by Nature Valley Oats and Honey Crunch Bars. And you'll hear some of Will with the director of The Last Dance with Dan Bernstein. We're going to air that in the middle of the 5 o'clock hour of the show. It was very informative stuff on the process behind The Last Dance. But I have not heard this yet, but Tanny says that, Mac, there's an all-time malaprop, and it might even go beyond the malaprop here. So let's enjoy this together in true McNeil and Parkins mob fashion. He's a part of the team now. If he's hosting shows, he's fair game. Here's our guy, Will Perdue.
You know, my wife told me an analogy last night. There's the carrot analogy, and there's the stick. The Bulls were the stick. If you needed to be a carrot, this was the wrong team for you, because it's not the approach that he took, and it's not the approach that Phil Jackson took. I lived it.
What is he talking about?
What, the carrot or the stick? Hell,
I honestly, what?
I'm lost.
You know, my wife told me an analogy last night. There's the carrot analogy, and there's the stick.
The phrase carrot and stick is a metaphor for the use of a combination of reward and punishment to induce a desired behavior based on the idea that a cart driver might activate a reluctant horse by dangling a carrot in front of it and smacking it on the rear of the stick. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, my wife told me an analogy last night. There's the carrot analogy and there's the stick.
Yeah. It's not a blind squirrel finding a nut twice a day. It's not
no.
good, because Vinnie Goodwill delivers that with such confidence that it's going to be impossible to top that. But how confusing that is pretty great. That's Mark Brody announcing that dude's firing.
If you needed to be a carrot, this was the wrong team for you.
If you needed to be a carrot. That's my favorite part.
It's really good.
You know, my wife told me an analogy last night. There's the carrot analogy and there's the stick. The Bulls were the stick. If you needed to be a carrot, this was the wrong team for you.
That's awesome.
It's really good.
That's great.
It's really, really good.
So it's more like a vegetable than it is an insect, the carrot.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more of a vegetable than a spider, which is a stick or a snake.
Yeah.
So it's a spider more than it is a snake.
We all do it, all right? Open mouth, say things 3-4 hours a day, live radio, no edit, no editors. We all will do it, but yeah. I loved it. Steve Kerr, he was the real carrot of the team.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan was the stick.
Steve Kerr was a carrot, and he talked about how quick Jordan was to, we haven't covered this today, to apologize to him for punching him in the face after he got in Jordan's face and shoved him or hit him in the chest in a scrimmage. And this goes back to having some ability to recognize you've done somebody wrong and apologize to them. And while Pippen may have apologized to his teammates for 1.8 at the time, that he was sat down for an interview for this thing in the last few months, whenever that interview was cut with Pippen, and says he still would probably do the same thing today. Come on, man. Even Jordan had it in him to apologize to Steve Kerr for dotting his I.
Didn't have his phone number, though. I loved that.
Not a surprise.
Yeah, no, not a surprise at all.
Why would he?
Yeah, it's you just got car phones at that point. You've got like six
Center,
numbers.
They gave me the numbers. It's Steve Kerr.
I called Steve. You had to find his number, but he earned your respect that day.
We talked it out, and it was probably in a weird way the best thing that I ever did.
Couple of glaring cell phones would have really changed how this whole thing went down, right? Like, Jordan doesn't need to call the Birdo Center to ask for Steve Kerr's number. He probably
just texts him, to be honest with you. He'll just text, sorry, man.
SRY with a little shrug emoji.
SRY fist bump.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then James Jordan probably not off the grid for 72 hours at a time. Just hanging out, driving around, anything like that. If there are cell phones, they probably figure that whole thing out a lot sooner.
Yeah, and there were a lot of people who said, who in the world parks, you know? I know this is not a common thing, but for James Jordan to park in a rest area and get some sack, I know that's not something everybody does, but I don't think it's something that makes somebody completely weird, because I don't think that's a weird behavior that is one of mine. I've got a lot weirder behaviors. We hit that a little while ago, and a few people texted us, and they said it at the time, too. Who in the world stops at a rest? Well, that's what they're there for, if you need to sleep.
It's a rest stop.
Yeah, it's a rest stop. That's what you do there. And while probably, you know, not the safest thing in the world to do, a lot of people feel pretty comfortable in one of those places where you just, you know, turn the vehicle off and get some sack. I do it. I did it last year. I slept in my vehicle. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I should learn. But I don't think
that's
that.
That's a little bit of victim blaming there. Like, that's...
Exactly. Exactly.
That's
not... The hell's he doing that? Well, I thought it was more curious that Dolores gave him all of the leash that he got to go on 2 or 3 day outings and not say where he is.
Hey, man, you know, everyone's relationship is different. But, yeah, that was – something tells me in the era of texting and cell phones, you've got a little bit more of a check-in. Sometimes when – like in normal times when you're out working and doing stuff, to get home and you see your significant other and it's like, how's your day? You know about my day. Mm-hmm. We've been texting throughout the day. Like, we're not ever really disconnected in any sort of meaningful way. Back then, you could be disconnected for 48 hours like it was absolutely nothing. Jordan also has been a meme legend in this series, and it's one thing to clown on LeBradford Smith, and it's weird, and he finds all these new angles for anger, you know, even in NBA Finals games, George Karl, and...
During the Finals, we go out to dinner one night. George Karl's over on the other side, having dinner. Hey, there's George Karl over there. And George Karl does not come over and speak to him.
He walked right past me. Now look at my, really? Oh, so that's how you gonna play it?
You know, he just kind of went by, and I went, uh-oh, should have never done that.
I said, it's a crock of shit. You know, we went to Carolina. You know Dean Smith. You know, I see him in the summer. We play golf. You gonna do this? Okay, fine. That's all I needed. That's all I needed for him to do that, and it became personal with me.
So insane.
George Karl, the John Lithgow-looking coach of the Sonics, did not stop to kiss his ring.
Please make this personal.
He sure did.
Yeah, he did. So insane. Like, and then he says that he made up that LeBradford Smith said, nice game, Mike.
Right.
Like, what
right.
A pathological competitor. Like, and we know this, that is not new. That's why I said earlier, it's like it's affirming so many of the things that we knew about Jordan. It's not changing the mind, but just some of the details and the unapologetic nature of it all of these years later is like, he is who he is, he doesn't apologize for it, and that's what he was. But I thought it was interesting that Jordan, as much of a student of the game as he was, with Gary Payton, still wasn't willing to give him his due when he was played the clip of Peyton saying that he had some success on him.
The first three games, Mike ripped us, ripped a hole in us, ripped a hole in our ass, really. We got down 3-0. I was mad. I said, what you talking about, George? I'm guarding whatever you say. I said, you can't control this no more. A lot of people backed down the bike. I didn't. I made it a point. I said, just tire him out. You just got to tire him out. And I kept hitting him and banging him and hitting him and banging him. It took a toll on Mike.
it took a toll. And then I feel myself resting him a little bit. And then the series changed. And I wish I could have did it earlier. I don't know if the outcome would have been different, but it was a difference. and beating him down a little bit.
The glove. I had no problem with the glove. I had no problem with Gary Payton. I had a lot of other things on my mind.
So Jordan would not give the defensive player of the year in 1996, who led the league in steals in 1996, right, who was first team All-NBA defense 9 years in a row, including 1996. All these years later, he would not give him any credit for slowing him down a little bit by his standards in games 4, 5, and 6, instead blaming of it, he had things on his mind, which in the clinching game, game 6, when he was 4 of 18 on Father's Day, he clearly did, but the stats are out there. First 3 games of the finals, 96 finals, not being guarded by Gary Payton, he averaged 31 a game, shot 46% from the floor. 3 games guarded by Gary Payton, 23 a game, 36% from the floor. Like, Gary Payton did a nice job relatively on Michael Jordan, but Michael Jordan can't admit that's just, it's weird to me that he won't even, Gary Payton's an all-time basketball player.
I got Michael no Jordan problem can't with the glove. I love that. I got no problem with the glove. Other things no on my mind. Yeah, well, you know, maybe he did. He didn't like to give credit. You're right. He always bristled when anybody was given credit for being, you know, doing a good job on him defensively, going all the way back to when he was at North Carolina.
Right.
You know, to perish the thought of somebody actually holding him to 11 points and knocking him out when Dan Dockich in Indiana did that. And, boy, don't remind him of him many years after the fact. Dan Dockich couldn't kick. He just got all upset about that with me. He didn't want to have any of that conversation. But
it's just
that's MJ.
It is. It is him, and it is unapologetic, and I respect it on some levels. But, man, talk about a guy who hasn't evolved. Like, he is the same. You said, like, yeah, you know, I had these opinions back then, and maybe I have even more of an understanding or compassion or empathy for it now. No, that's not Michael Jordan. Like, he is who he is unapologetically all the damn time. He is the stick, not the carrot in this analogy.
That's right. You got to know which one you want to be.
You know, my wife told me an analogy last night. There's the carrot analogy and there's the stick. The Bulls were the stick. If you needed to be a carrot, this was the wrong team for you.
McNeil and Parkins, the carrot and stick on the score.
Jammed him, ate him up. Todd, long way to go. Watch out, he goes in.
I think he made the catch.
Made the catch. Did he hang on?
But he's hurt.
Yeah, he's hurt.
It was a spectacular effort, and this is a real, real bad sight. Wow, it looked like he hit his mouth right on the seat. Ball was in the glove.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Carlos Sanchez and...
When we find out...
I'm going downstairs. You take over, okay?
So Carlos takes over at third base.
One of the all-timers, you have to hear it or have seen it to believe that it happened. Happy anniversary to Hawk Harrelson leaving the broadcast booth mid-game to go check on Todd Frazier.
Oh my goodness, I had forgotten all about that. What the...
All right. I just saw him.
And?
And?
What in the world compelled him to go check on him?
Love Todd Frazier.
I guess. My goodness. I've never
Concern,
heard that before
Mac.
In any sport, but with a broadcaster, I got to go check it out. Oh, wow. That's were they that tight? Tanny, I was unaware of it.
I'm not a doctor. It appears he's going to be okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you remember that season, you know, the Sox got off to a nice little start, and Hawk, I think he kind of he developed a real real bond with Todd Frazier. I remember the night before, I think it was, or two nights ago, he had him on the field for a post-game interview, and, you know, Todd Frazier's totally playing the Hawk. He's like, hey, get on back there. And Hawk's, like, eating it up. Like, so he loved Todd Frazier.
I got to go check on him.
Yeah.
That's hysterical.
It's just, you're right. Like, you can't think of another comp because it hasn't happened. Like that is that is Hawk.
It's like Hawk. By the time you get there, he's going to be good. You know?
Right. The information's actually going to be back in the press box where you left.
Yeah, Herm Schneider's got everything under control, Hawk. Come on. Have another vodka and call the game.
All right. I just saw him. And?
Is he weeping? He sounds like he's crying.
I don't think he's weeping.
All right. I just saw him.
And?
I didn't see him for maybe 15, 20 seconds. Hermie got him, and they're going. It appears his teeth went through his lip. But I was worried about a broken jaw or something like that. And it appears, knock on wood, I'm not a doctor, it appears he's going to be okay. He just said he was more scared than anything.
I can't
just
blame him.
Can't blame him, no. But knock on wood, that's all there is. Oh, man.
Wow. Knock on wood if you're with me.
He is indeed upset by the teeth coming through the lip.
And by the way, that's good journalism right there, clarifying to your viewing audience that Hawk Harrelson, in fact, not a doctor.
Yeah.
That was good.
It appears, knock on wood, I'm not a doctor. It appears he's going to be okay.
All right, good. Glad we got that out of the way. I didn't want White Sox fans to be mistaken.
Wow. That's a something MD. Right there.
So good.
I got to go check on him. I'll be right back.
Happy birthday.
Imagine Thayer does that when Bobby Massey goes down with a hamstring opening day. Jeff, take care of things. I'll be right back. I got to go see what's up with Bobby.
Mark Grody could be your field analyst. I got to go check on him. Go see if he's going to be okay.
What's he going to check on? There's trainers down there. They have a medical staff nearby.
He's worried, Mac. He's worried.
He just gets up. His microphone's rumbling on the air. That's great. Just put the headset down while it's live.
All right, speaking of broadcasting, you can give me this answer on the other side before we get back into the Jordan documentary, and we're going to play some of the director with Dan and Will Perdue earlier. ESPN is done with Boog and Tess for Monday.
Whoa!
Yeah, I know. That is confirmed. It is also confirmed that it is going to be in-house candidates to replace them. Lewis Riddick, Dan Orlovsky, Brian Griese are among the analysts. Steve Levy, apparently the favorite for the play-by-play role. Pat McAfee could have a role as an analyst, field analyst in the booth, undetermined. I let Dan McNeil build the booth from the ESPN on-air personnel. You build that booth. I want to hear what you would do for Monday Night Football coming up next on The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.